Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the 7th of December 2015, the podcast that dashes through the snow in a two-horse closed sleigh. This is your host, Shane Killian, and joining me again is Travis Retriever. Travis, welcome back to the show.
Good to be back, Shane.
Let's nebulize the news of the bogus. So back when it happened, we covered how earthquake scientists in Italy were actually arrested for failing to predict a quake. We have good news. The scientists have been cleared of all charges for good, with one exception.
Oh, dear.
Well, it's a reasonable exception. These were seven researchers, three seismologists, a volcanologist, and two seismic engineers. They were initially each given six-year jail sentences for basically telling the truth that there was no more or less risk of an earthquake than there was at any other time. So Italy's Supreme Court completely cleared six of them. The seventh was the deputy head of Italy's Civil Protection Department at the time the earthquake happened, and he was the one that misrepresented what the scientists said. The scientists said that there was no more or less risk of a quake than there was at any other time, which was true. But what this guy said is that, no, the public's safe. And he even said, quote, "The ongoing tremors were favorable because they discharged energy and therefore made a larger quake less likely." Obviously, that wasn't the case, so
stuff seems like a bit much. I mean, jeez.
Yeah, I mean, they sentenced him to 2 years, and maybe that is a bit much, but, I mean, he did misrepresent it.
Yeah.
Because there's no consensus that a bunch of little earthquakes mean that there's less of a chance of a big one. It could, or it could mean that there's more of a chance, or it could have nothing to do with it. It all depends on what's going on, but they don't have any way of getting the information they need to know what the case is at that particular time.
I don't know. I mean, it reminds me of how in that one podcast you did with Hawkeye way back when, where you noted many of the scientists actually instigating panics about how, oh, global warming is, it's Armageddon, etc. And I think, gee, wouldn't it be nice if they were held accountable for that kind of BS?
But, I mean, that's how the political incentives are perversed. You know, you have this idea of, is there a risk? Yes, but not much of one. But what if the worst does happen, then I might get held accountable for it. So the incentive is to just vastly overstate the risk just to cover your own ass.
More reason to not have politics in academia.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, folks, have you never heard of the story of the boy who cried wolf? When you keep crying wolf and that dog don't show up, and people rightly stop listening to you, you have no one to blame but yourself. I'm sorry.
So a lot of scientists are understandably relieved by this. UK seismologist Ian Main from the University of Edinburgh last year had said to Nature, quote, "We don't want to have to be worried about the possibility of being prosecuted if we give advice on earthquakes. That would discourage giving honest opinion." Say, if you're tired of the promos in this podcast, well, the patrons got it early and with no ads or promos. Just go to patreon.bogosity.tv and donate at any level.
Hi, I'm Dave. You may recognize me from previous Bogosity episodes. However, I'm not here to talk about that. I'm also part of a podcast, the Superplex Brothers Podcast. Head on over to superplexbros.com. You can check out the podcast for video games and pro wrestling. We also have news, reviews, and editorials and all kinds of stuff just to talk about video games and pro wrestling and everything else that comes in between. So if you're into that, why don't you come check us out?
Well, as if we needed another data point as to how regulations destroy businesses, the beloved Robicelli's Bakery in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn is closing down and moving to Baltimore solely because of onerous regulation. And this is according to the bakery's owner, Allison Robicelli. She and her husband, Matt, have decided to close down because they ended up being in the position where they had to work 70 hours a week just to break even. They were sacrificing both their personal income and time spent with their children and family just to try to keep the place going. They even created a viral dessert,
ooh,
but that wasn't enough to keep them over the top in the New York City environment.
To give people an idea of on aggregate, how bad regulations are for business and jobs. That study, for every regulator the government hires, 150 jobs are lost. And for every regulator the government fires, 150 jobs are gained. So yeah, that's one easy way to help with the economy and help it recover and create tons of jobs. Fire and kick to the curb every regulator, period. And allow private equivalents like UL and ISO 9000 to fill the void.
So, according to Allison, quote, having done this for 15 years, you start to chalk it up to the ebbs and flows of the business, which are natural and they happen everywhere and it's something that you're just used to. But you sit down with the numbers and realize that you're not allowed to have ebbs and flows anymore in New York because margins have gotten so tight that there's no room to wiggle anymore.
Oh, wow. They actually lasted 15 years having a small business in frickin' New York City? Oh my god, they have a lot more patience for that kind of BS than I ever will or could.
Well, and I think they lasted long because they're really popular in that area. A lot of people like the bakery.
Yeah. I mean, I'm even on a keto diet now, and I'd probably give it a try just for the heck of it.
Well, they'll be in Baltimore at some point, so...
Ooh, yay! So, yeah, that's within driving distance.
Cool. Yeah, apparently the business environment in Baltimore is a lot more friendly.
Yeah, sounds about right.
And they were facing all sorts of expenses, including payroll expenses, like the minimum wage, and facing an upcoming increase. The costs of government monopoly utilities like water, gas, and power kept going up.
But those are natural monopolies. Oh, wait, those are government monopolies? Oh, well, yeah, but, that, you see, the reason why we need GovCo to have these monopolies is they would become monopolies in a free market, and you don't want that.
Yeah, and there was all sorts of bureaucratic red tape and dealing with the city on all sorts of things. There were fines associated for just basic mistakes, and even things that weren't their fault, like when people would double park outside their business during rush hour, the businesses would get fined, not the drivers.
Which is idiotic.
Well, most restaurants and food service establishments want rent to be about 10% of annual sales. Food costs shouldn't be any more than 30%, so that leaves 60% left over. Then there's the cost of labor. Robicelli says that used to be 30%. It's now moving up to 45%. And she says, quote, this is not ideal. This is not good math. But it's our options. Do we want our cooks to stay? Yes. Do we want our cooks to be able to work? Yes. Do we want them to be able to make a living doing it? Yes. The numbers aren't on our side to do this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, here in this next quote, we have just the perfect expression of what we've been saying all along about regulations and minimum wage and things like that, increasing the cost of doing business. Quote, Matt and I would say, what do we need to survive? We don't want to be the bad guys and not make jobs and pay our cooks. But it's so hard to afford to do that. What you end up doing is taking it out of your salary and then taking it out of your profits. And you can't keep raising prices on food because people will stop shopping.
Yeah, well, money being a finite thing and all, last I checked.
And one of the big things they mention is the reason why is the New York City power monopoly consolidated Edison, known as Con Ed. And they said it was, quote, kind of one of the kickers of why we closed. If you go to a meeting of small business owners and you say something about Con Ed, you're going to hear more about Con Ed than the landlords. There's nothing you can do about it. There's no free market for electricity or utilities.
And I've actually had people try to deny that power companies and utilities are monopolies, leading me to believe that they've done absolutely zero research. And not even just research, but just trying to find others.
Yeah, so you have the things like I talked about before, about being fined for parking violations that other people make in front of the shop. And it just makes them feel like they're ATMs for the city. She says, quote, if you see some guy having an ice cream cart in front of his shop, huge permit. Outdoor seating, huge permit. If you decide you just want to have a bench in front of your store, but somebody decides to pull it out a little bit so it's a little bit over 18 inches off the front, fine. Massive fine. I haven't even scratched the surface. New York now is a city of no. You have this great idea? No, you can't do it. You want to try this out? No. You go to Baltimore, and it's a city of, well, why the fuck not? Let's try this. They really, really love their city, and it's exciting. It's that energy I felt when I was growing up in New York. I've been here my entire life, and I don't know what I was thinking. It won't come back in time for us, and it was just time for me to be able to say I probably held on for very stupid reasons. My reasons for hanging on were that I was born here, and I love this place too much.
Speaking of Baltimore, I cannot but wonder how it compares to places like, say, Tyson's Corner, because I know that the fur convention I went to about half a year ago, furthermore, they were originally in Baltimore, but they ended up moving to Tyson's Corner. I heard something about, like, restrictions on gambling or whatever, and I'm thinking, like, it makes me wonder how that place compares. Go figure.
Oh, it's funny, I can tell you. I think it was the 2004 North Carolina Libertarian Convention. They had the idea of doing this fundraiser, and they had all these games set up. You know, they had Monopoly and all these sort of things. And what you did is you just paid $10 to sit at the table and, you know, play Monopoly or whatever. And one of the games was Texas Hold'em. And so you weren't actually gambling. You just paid $10. But, of course, you know, you had the chips and everything, you know, for the betting, but you didn't actually win anything. So they have that little drinks cart that they come in and set up, and you can get sodas, and you can also get alcoholic beverages. They had to keep it out in the hall, because in the state of North Carolina, it is illegal to serve alcoholic beverages in a room where people are pretending to gamble.
Oh, brother. To the Bakers and their family, I wish them well, and when you get there, welcome to my home state of Maryland.
Hackers, terrorists, the NSA, but I repeat myself. Your online security is under attack, and the weakest point is your password. That's why you need LastPass. LastPass plugs into your browser and allows you to randomly generate strong, unique passwords anywhere on the web, all protected by one master password. LastPass sets up in minutes and gives you secure automatic logins throughout the web, synchronizing across all your browsers and all your computers, at home, at work, or on the road. It even securely stores sensitive form data, including credit card numbers. Back up sensitive documents, membership info, Wi-Fi logins, and more. And with LastPass Premium, you can get these benefits on other applications and even mobile devices, and also get priority customer support. Sign up at password.bogosity.tv for a free month of LastPass Premium. Log in securely everywhere using the last password you'll ever have to remember. Go to password.bogosity.tv and get LastPass now. All right, this next one is confirming something we already knew, but it's nice to hear from actual ex-drone pilots of how drone strikes fuel the hatred that leads to terrorist attacks, including the attacks on Paris. And these are four former U.S. drone operators. They all worked on remote assassination missions in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other places. And they held a press conference where they described in detail a lot of the inner workings and culture of the U.S. drone program, which they say is fueling all of this resentment and hatred. And it kind of mirrors what we covered a few weeks ago with the leaked documents that were published in The Intercept. And this really supplements that, and a lot of things they say just really back that up and even expand on it. Quote, "We came to the realization that the innocent civilians we were killing only fueled the feelings of hatred that ignited terrorism and groups like ISIS, while also serving as a fundamental recruitment tool similar to Guantanamo Bay. This administration and its predecessors have built a drone program that is one of the most devastating driving forces for terrorism and destabilization around the world."
Wow. So it turns out when you bomb people, destroy their property, kill or maim them and their families and friends and neighbors, that a lot of people don't like that.
Amazing.
Funny how that works.
No, you're just being radical again.
Yeah.
It must be because they hate us for freedom. They hate us for McDonald's, and Islam is a religion of hate.
This is why I find it so difficult for many people who whine about empathy, which half the time I find it translates to, well, you need to have empathy for me. Oh, but those people there, lol, fuck them, lol. It's like, a bit disingenuous, folks.
One thing I wonder, if we were doing this in places like India and China and Thailand, and there was all this terrorism coming from them, would people be saying that Buddhism is a religion of hatred and violence when we get all the terrorists from that?
Who knows? You established pretty well in your 9/11 commentary that, to the state theist, sorry folks, this is not about religion. It's about blowback. I mean, seriously, Have they never heard of the expression, you reap what you sow? Because apparently that's not taught anymore. Stuff like that, the boy who cried wolf, and so forth. If a person supports stuff like that, then I don't want to hear one word from them about libertarians being heartless, or empathy, or compassion, or such bollocks.
So last time when we covered this, we mentioned that if they kill people who aren't the target, in other words, innocent people, they're labeled as EKIA, enemy killed in action. According to former sensor operator Brandon Bryant, many of those are innocent civilians who bought SIM cards that were traded off. And we mentioned this a little bit in the leaked documents. They were saying, well, what you're really doing is not getting the terrorist, but getting his mother because his mother has his phone. Well, according to Bryant, what the terrorists will do is they'll use the phone for a while and then they'll sell it. And they're tracking the SIM card. They're not tracking the actual person. And he says that SIM cards are one of the primary identifiers. But then what happens is you get these people who are buying all these cell phones on the cheap. They're not terrorists. They're just innocent people going, hey, great. I got a cheap cell phone. Service is great. Hey, that's a funny looking plane. You know, and he says, quote, this happens pretty often. They're pretty wise to it.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of reminds me of this idea of putting a tracking collar or something on a dog, and the collar gets off the dog, and something else picks it up. And so instead of tracking the dog, you're tracking that other thing. Yeah, I mean, doesn't it just remind you of that?
Or I forget what it was. It was a movie or a TV show or something like that, but they were tracking this guy's cell phone. But he just puts it in, like, there's this little part under the bumper of a bus that's going across. He just sticks it in there, and so it's going across country with the bus, and that's what they're following, and the guy's going in a completely different direction.
Oh, God.
So then you have Michael Haas, who was pointing out a lot of the terms they have to talk about innocent people who are killed. We mentioned a few of those before, and they're really psychotic, but apparently that was just scratching the surface, because Haas says that children who are spotted from a drone's camera are called fun-sized terrorists.
Oh my God.
Other times they're called tits or terrorist in training. And launching a drone strike on them was cutting the grass before it grows too tall or pulling the weeds before they take over the lawn. And Haas says, quote, at the time you're so immersed in the culture that you just kind of go along with it. It was anything you could do to remove their humanity, but in the process, you lose your own humanity.
Mm-hmm.
But Haas mentioned a time where he was working with a rookie operator, and the rookie was on a training mission, and he took the rookie operator off the mission because the operator was trying to justify a missile strike on his own hunch that the target was just up to no good rather than solid intelligence. So he took the rookie operator off the mission, and he was reprimanded for it.
Wow.
And he said, quote, it became really apparent as an instructor under the Obama administration that the mentality had shifted away from intel building. Firing a hellfire became the ultimate goal.
Yeah, vote Democrat for kinder, gentler imperialism. Yeah. And drone strikes. And bombed hospitals.
And where's the anti-war left?
Yeah. Do you remember when the left was at least pretending to be anti-war?
Yeah.
You remember, I remember, and I'm sure Pepperidge Farm probably remembers too. I miss those days.
Mm. Yeah, I just remember the anti-war rallies and people were holding all these Obama signs, and I'm like, what are you people, stupid?
Jeez.
Yeah. Obama is anti-war like the Pope is an atheist, you know?
Or, yeah, he's anti-war in the same way that Reg Park is anti-muscle. I mean, please.
So a moderator asked them how many of them suffered from PTSD. All four of them raised their hands, and they said that a lot of former drone operators have been homeless and unable to get proper care from Veterans Affairs.
Yeah, I mean, hey, folks, that is socialized medicine. Yeah, sorry, conservatives, but it doesn't somehow stop being socialism just because it's something that you personally agree or like.
And since coming out, their lawyer says that they've been intimidated, receiving anonymous death threats and phone calls from the FBI, saying they're on an ISIS hit list, and saying they should tone down their presence and not speak about the drone attacks.
Though I speak badly about folks, both in the military and in police, for what I'm pretty sure or hoping are obvious reasons at this point, remove that apparatus, and I'd wager I'd probably be a lot nicer to them, or giving service, etc., than their own government, you know?
Yeah, and people have to realize these aren't people who woke up one day and said, hey, I guess I'm a psychopath. I think I'll join the military and drop bombs on children. They get you tiny little bit by tiny little bit. You know, this is the enemy. We're doing it purely defensively. And then they say the best defense is a good offense. And then they just do it slowly. And like I said, you have the echo chamber where you're completely dehumanized and all of this is perfectly good and justifiable. And
it almost kind of makes me feel sorry for these people. Since I pointed out, it sounds like a lot of them will often end up going to this stuff because they've run out of options and don't have anywhere else to go for employment other than the dole, if even that. They do have my sympathy and my empathy, if not anything else.
Now you can make Amazon purchases with Bitcoin by going to purse.bogosity.tv. That's P-U-R-S-E. Moreover, most purchases can be made at a discount. Save an average of 20% just by buying from Purse, or get even greater discounts by linking your Amazon wish list. Go to purse.bogosity.tv. Bogosity.tv is a participant in the Amazon Services LLC Associates Program, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide a means for sites to earn advertising fees by advertising and linking to Amazon.com. Just clear your cookies and go to Amazon.bogosity.tv, or check the right-hand side of the podcast page for Amazon's best deals, including the deal of the day and limited-time lightning deals on all sorts of great products. So next time you buy online, go to Amazon.bogosity.tv. And now it's time to discommend this week's biggest bogon emitter. And this week it goes to the Manhattan District Attorney. And this is really getting to be one of those subjects I really don't want to cover anymore because all the main points have been covered to death. But they just keep coming out with worse and worse stuff. Yes, it's more strong encryption, Bogosity.
Oh my god.
So they say, quote, last fall, a decision by a single company changed the way those of us in law enforcement work to keep the public safe and bring justice to victims and their families.
Oh my god.
In September 2014, Apple Incorporated announced that its new operating system for smartphones and tablets would employ, by default, what is commonly referred to as full disk encryption, making data on its devices completely inaccessible without a passcode. Shortly thereafter, Google Incorporated announced that it would do the same.
Yay!
Yeah, that sounds good to me. Apple's and Google's decisions to enable full disk encryption by default on smartphones means that law enforcement officials can no longer access evidence of crimes stored on smartphones, even though the officials have a search warrant issued by a neutral judge. Yeah, they can. You just get the guy to unlock it.
Yeah.
And if he refuses, you know, you can put him in jail for contempt of court and stuff like that.
And really, since when has not been having probable cause ever stopped them before?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll be sure to tell all the poor puppies that have been shot up by them, or the poor kittens that were killed in front of those one kids I think we covered way back when. That was like cartoonishly evil, something like you'd see on The Onion for crying out loud. Ah, Jesus.
So, this next sentence that I'm about to read, I think, is just the one that really says what the big problem with their mentality is. Quote,
oh, Jesus.
Apple and Google are not responsible for keeping the public safe. That is the job of law enforcement. So you're not allowed to do things to keep people safe.
Double bogon points to them if they're also the same people who would whine about companies not following regulations and saying, well, they should have been keeping people safe.
Yeah, because free market companies don't care about your safety.
I must have missed the memo where dead people can buy products.
So I'm going to skip through most of this document and go down to part 5, where they talk about what they actually want to happen. And they say, quote, there is no provision of the U.S. Constitution or of any state constitution that would require producers of smartphones and operating systems to make smartphones amenable to government searches. Oh, okay, we're good, right? The Constitution says you can't do it, so you can't do it.
Got it.
Not so fast.
Oh, bloody hell.
Here's the very next sentence. A federal statute could, however, compel such amenability.
You know what kills me about these people? They always say how, oh, well, you know, the law from government, etc. They treat it like it's a holy writ, complain time and time again. I'm sure we've all seen this. Yet, these same people, when dealing with what is supposed to be the highest law of the land, for some reason just throw it all out the window. But then what else is new?
So how do they justify it under the Constitution? No points for guessing. Quote, the Commerce Clause gives the federal government the authority to regulate commerce among the several states and with foreign nations. Because smartphones... Oh, man, this is so twisted. Because smartphones are part of interstate and foreign commerce, a federal statute regulating smartphones would comfortably fall within the power of Congress to regulate activities that substantially affect interstate commerce.
It reminds me of the bit from your Constitution series lecture. The definitions, the words at the time they were written, are what's locked in and what it means. And back then, according to the dictionaries available at the time, the word regulate did not mean to control. It meant to keep regular. So if anything, this is going against the Commerce Clause because it's harming the ability of folks like me, you, and others to keep our transactions via our phones regular and by making them less secure.
Well, even beyond that, though, they're conflating the idea of interstate commerce, which is the act of buying and selling the phones, with regulating the phones themselves and how they're made. And I don't know if any court has ever conflated that before. That might be a road too far even for them.
I mean, I kind of thought something like that. I thought based on the way they worded it or something that... Are they seriously trying to say that because I can use my phone, like, to call someone, say... either in another state or, dare we to dream, another country, that, oh, well, yeah, that's interstate or international commerce, ergo, we can regulate that. I mean, that was the impression I got. What about you?
I think they're just talking about the sale because they sell these things across state lines, but either way, it's still bogus.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with whether or not they can regulate full disk encryption.
Jeez. But, of course, without government, we wouldn't have the internet. Lol.
Yeah, so they say, quote, the federal legislation would provide in substance that any smartphone manufactured, leased, or sold in the U.S. must be able to be unlocked or its data accessed by the operating system designer. Compliance with such a statute would not require new technology or costly adjustments. It would require simply that designers and makers of operating systems not design or build them to be impregnable to lawful governmental searches.
That completely went over my head. So what is that in layman's terms?
Basically, they're saying that instead of phrasing it in an active fashion, like requiring them to put back doors in, they're trying to make it sound more like a passive. We're not requiring them to put in back doors. We're just saying that they should not take the extra step of not having any back doors in there to begin with, or something.
Basically, they want to be able to not only spy our phone lines and everything, but also just be able to pretty much have full access to all of our phones. So, I mean, come on, let's be honest. That's what they want.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, let's be honest here.
This is all blowing smoke.
Yeah.
So let's skip down to part 6B, where they say, quote, the loss of personal security would be minimal. The principal argument in favor of making devices impregnable to the government is that any effort that would allow the government to collect evidence lawfully from devices would necessarily lessen the device's security and thus increase the possibility of a bad actor unlawfully accessing device data.
Yeah?
There is a cost-benefit analysis to be considered. The loss in personal security that would be occasioned by the proposed statute must be weighed against the gain in societal safety that it would create.
And because as we all know, government is so good at making economic calculation. Ludwig von Mises says hi.
Well, and what are they talking about societal safety? I mean, isn't a loss in personal security a loss of societal safety if they can steal your credit cards and your identity and stuff like that? Why does that always get left out?
No kidding.
In these discussions.
And of course, guaranteed, if it were the other way around and you were going to try and spy or watch on them, they'd hit the roof, as they indeed do. Seriously, just ask the people who have been jailed, beaten, if not killed, for trying to videotape their armed thugs they will call police, even in public when they're doing their job, and therefore have no reasonable expectation of privacy.
Quote, rendering devices running iOS 8 or Lollipop 5.0 amenable to search warrants would put such devices on the same footing as those that run all previous version of iOS and Android operating systems. So they're saying it won't make them less secure, it'll just make them work like previous versions, which were less secure.
So it won't make them less secure, but it will make them less secure.
Yeah.
Because when you're dealing in bogosity, you can just make stuff up.
Yeah.
Yet another reason to bring the final arbiter of reality into things.
There has been no evidence of which we are aware of security breaches that have affected the latter types of devices. Well, let's see. In September, iOS devices were vulnerable to malware called Xcode Ghost, which was even in many apps on the iTunes Store.
Yeah.
Last month, one called WireLurker was found in the wild, and it specifically got around iOS security. Just gets right around it. In the Android world, last July you had StageFright, which allowed attackers to compromise your phone with a malformed text or video message, and you also had Certificate in August, which allowed hijackers to get access to your entire phone and can even fake the security certificates that encrypted apps use. So, they're either lying outright, or they're so incompetent they don't know what they're talking about.
It kind of strikes me as a kind of a shady, semi-slick way of trying to shift the burden of proof.
Yeah.
They're making the positive claim of forcing or requiring companies to make their stuff less secure, and then saying, oh, well, there's no evidence for this or that.
Well, it's also an argument from ignorance. We're not aware of any.
Yeah.
So listen to the apologetics here, quote, "Technology benefits us in ways too many to count and in amounts impossibly large to calculate. But it can also be used to harm us, and unless we regulate it intelligently and carefully, we may suffer great harm. Smartphones are technological bank vaults, but unlike bank vaults, which, no matter how strong, are accessible to search warrants, smartphones are becoming beyond the reach of law enforcement. The result will be crimes that go unsolved, harms that go unanswered, and victims who are left beyond the protection of the law. Of course, it will also result in fewer crimes and fewer victims overall, but let's just ignore that part."
Yeah. And these are the people who invented the internet, and without which we wouldn't have technology or computers and NASA and, space travel and stuff, despite all conceivable evidence to the contrary, but yeah, who needs that shit, right?
So all of that makes the Manhattan District Attorney this week's biggest bogon emitter. If you're on the Wi-Fi in a coffee shop or hotel, anyone on that network can get your traffic. Do you really trust all of those strangers? For that matter, do you really trust your ISP? A VPN can protect you from prying eyes, disguise your location, and even foil government censors. It's essential in this day and age, so go to vpn.bogosity.tv and you'll be taken to BoxPN. Starting at just $2.99 a month, you can get unlimited high-speed connections to VPN servers all over the world, and they don't log connections, so your privacy is assured. Traveling abroad, just VPN home, and don't worry about what those other governments are doing. Back at home, stop your ISP from traffic shaping and messing with the quality internet access you're paying good money for. You can connect from multiple machines at once, including your smartphone or tablet, and it supports all the secure standards, including OpenVPN and SSTP. Bypass sensors and surveillance with your own secure VPN connection. Go to vpn.bogosity.tv. And now let's deflocculate this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire!
And it's yet more encryption bogosity.
Oh dear.
This time from Claire Fogus, former speechwriter for UK Prime Minister David Cameron. And if you're thinking, Shane, encryption again? Wasn't there anyone else who deserves it more? Let me answer that by quoting the title of the article. Why is Silicon Valley helping the tech-savvy jihadists?
Yeah, that pretty much answers the question right there, and elegantly, playing the terrorism card.
So she says, quote, "What will it take? 129 dead on American soil? 129 killed in California? What level of atrocity? What location will it take for the gods of Silicon Valley to wake up to the dangerous game they are playing by plunging their apps and emails ever deeper into encryption, so allowing jihadists to plot behind an impenetrable wall?"
And yet the 1,000-plus people murdered by police this year alone, and she doesn't bat an eye.
But again, that isn't how the Paris attacks happened. They were known terrorists communicating in the clear.
And I think you even pointed out that, yeah, they didn't even try to hide or anything like that at all.
No. I was kind of wondering if they were just kind of doing the whole thing to punk the authorities. Yep, doing it out in the open. Here's a question for Claire Fogus. How many stolen credit card numbers? How many lost identities? How many security flaws on Internet of Things devices? And how much more malware will it take for people like you to realize that this is what we need? Silicon Valley needs to do a much better job protecting our data. Your chances of being killed by a terrorist are so close to zero it's not worth considering. Not so with being a victim of identity theft or a stolen credit card.
True that.
So she said, quote, "Fiendishly complex online encryption is providing the safe space for terrorists to plan bloodshed on an industrial scale." They don't need to. You're so incompetent they communicate out in the open and slip right under your radar.
Yeah, and to give you an idea, folks, how many terrorists in, what is it, like 12 years or what have the TSA called? Hint, one digit number, and it's as small as it gets. Yeah, zero.
Here's the part that makes my blood boil.
Oh boy.
Quote, "It goes back to Edward Snowden."
Oh my god.
"The weaselly inadequate whose grasp for posterity has proved a boon for ISIL. It was Snowden's revelation about government surveillance methods that triggered this extraordinary race towards deeper encryption." Okay, let's take this in reverse. Snowden's revelations triggered a race for deeper encryption. You know what? Good!
Yeah. How is that a bad thing? You're the ones wanting out, oh, well, security, security, security. Well, encryption is security, yet at the same time doesn't cost freedom. So shouldn't you be even more for it?
Second, these things have been available since the mid-90s.
No kidding.
You know, PGP and things like that, so you can do full secure end-to-end encryption on emails.
Seriously, what terrorists have actually been found to be caused by this stuff? I mean, yeah, they're kind of skipping over their little burden of proof there. She's just vapidly asserting.
As far as the boon for ISIL, no, that's your insane war in the Middle East. Bombing children in countries we aren't even at war with that's fueling their recruitment.
Uh-huh.
And then there's the ad hominem. Ed Snowden is a weaselly inadequate that our government was paying $200,000 a year as a contractor for the NSA, and who has shown himself to repeatedly be on the ball when it comes to not only encryption technology, but why it's so important that we protect ourselves even from our own governments.
No kidding. An inadequate? How? Bitch, please. Near as I can tell, he's one of the best damn guys in the field.
Oh, yeah. And funny how it's a grasp for posterity when he knew it would mean leaving his home and his family and his cushy job and living in exile somewhere, unable to come home because the last thing our government will give him is a fair trial.
No kidding. Funny how the folks who actually reveal the crimes of government, yeah, remember, that was what he did, lest we all forget. And rather than arresting the people who, and this may blow their mind, actually did the stuff, no, fuck it, they just go after him. Along with the media, who has always been in their pocket.
So she quotes Pavel Durov, making points that we've made, like we're in far greater danger from our own government or from identity theft and other things. And what does she say? Quote, "Tell that to the grieving of Paris."
Oh, piss off.
Hey, why don't you tell them how you failed to protect them even though they weren't communicating over encrypted channels?
But Shane, without government, we'd have riots, terrorist attacks, and wait.
And you knew this one was coming sooner or later. Quote, "This isn't about privacy, it's about profit."
Ooh boy.
Profit is bad! Evil profit!
Bitch! Really, sweetheart? So you'd work for free? Okay, cool. Awesome. Good. That much less tax dollars for the rest of us to pay. Oh, what? No, you wouldn't? Then shut up!
And what about free open source projects like GNU Privacy Guard, which securely encrypts email, or free apps like Signal, which will encrypt both texts and phone calls? How can they be doing it for profit when they don't charge any money?
I had to laugh when she mentioned safe space for them. It's like, seriously? Just one buzzword after another from her, isn't it?
All right, you got your irony shields up.
They're up, but, oh, they're weakened, and they're, I don't know if it's going to hold. Oh. Here we go, I'm bracing.
The tech firms have calculated that they build user numbers by inflaming fears of violations of privacy and offering more security than anyone else. As opposed to political yahoos who try to grab more power by inflaming fears of terrorism and then not protecting us from it.
Or hell, just look at any of the recent shootings where the people, as usual, can't even wait until the bodies are cold before bringing out their idiotic gun control agenda. Or for that matter, how about the anti-refugee stands who couldn't even wait for the Paris attack to even be over, couldn't even wait for the bodies to be dead before saying, it was refugees! This is why we have to restrict refugees!
And it turns out it wasn't refugees.
Yeah. Until I get some damn good evidence otherwise, like Game Changer tier here, then I'm going to assume Nate rightly conclude that the points you brought up for why we can't restrict immigrants also apply to the refugee argument as well.
Apple et al. Could, if they wanted, employ a fraction of their resources to work out how we can simultaneously keep the good guys' data secure and keep the bad guys in plain sight. How many times do we have to say it? It's mathematically impossible.
Math is math. It's the same for the, quote, bad guys as it is for the, quote, good guys. Deal with
it. Yeah, you can't make 2 plus 2 equal 4 for the good guys and 5 for the terrorists.
Yeah. I mean, really, just more proof that these people apparently believe in freaking magic. That just words on a paper, them having a special badge or an appointment or what have you, apparently can change reality. But you see, these guys are intellectual batters. One more reason why if someone's a statist but an atheist, no, you're not an atheist. You're a statist. The state is your god, and you worship that shit with all your might.
Brace yourself for this next one.
Oh my god.
Quote.
Oh boy.
The geniuses of Silicon Valley would be more than a match for the dunderheads in the desert. You mean like you aren't? You fail and fail and fail again, and then go whining to Silicon Valley to do the impossible, and then call the people you failed to protect us from dunderheads.
Yeah. Hey, if they're dunderheads, what the fuck does that make you?
They're dunderheads, and we're powerless to do anything about it unless you let us go into your phone's encryption.
Yeah, I feel like I've been through the song and dance before, sweetheart.
Paris must be a wake-up call. If they had any conscience at all, these great Western powerhouses of the 21st century would be joining the fight to preserve our way of life, not helping to facilitate Islamic State's way of death.
Oh, piss off! My god!
Yeah, who's the bigger threat to our way of life here?
Yeah, just one idiotic statement, complete with lack of self-awareness and the like, after another.
And that's why only Claire Fogus could be this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire!
Well, that wraps up this Two Bad Things That Go Worse Together edition of the Bogosity Podcast. As always, you can come to forum.bogosity.tv to read the show notes and join the discussion. This podcast depends on you to keep going, so please donate using the links on the website or at patreon.bogosity.tv, and feel free to join in by sending a question, statement, news article, or rant to podcast@bogosity.tv. You can even stick it in an audio file if you want. Thank you for listening, and thanks again to Travis Retriever for joining me.
You're welcome. It was fun.
Until next time, here's a quote from Bruce Schneier. The people who are speaking best to this are the psychologists who look at what it is like to live under constant gaze or under the threat of constant gaze. It makes you different. It makes you more conformist. It makes you less willing to think new thoughts, to try new ideas. It stagnates society. Any social change you look at, whether it's civil rights or marijuana legalization, whatever your issue is, it starts by people at this end, where it is socially unacceptable, doing it and having it be okay, and then it spreads slowly. Ubiquitous surveillance at this end stops that process cold. The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Imported License.
Bogosity.
Christmas time is coming, and the most classic of Christmas stories is A Christmas Carol, But how much do you know about the original Charles Dickens novella? Have you dismissed it as a children's book with one-dimensional characters amounting to nothing but platitudes and cliches? Maybe your appreciation of the book was even muted by those dry, boring, annotated books they made you read in school. My book, the sarcastically annotated A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, uses both facts and humor to present the book in a way you probably haven't seen it before. Giving praise when deserved and beratement when warranted, this book is put in the perspective of its time and shows a dimensional, multi-layered Ebenezer Scrooge from start to finish. Skepticism, history, and even economics are employed to show the book in relation to today in an easily accessible format. Appreciate the Christmas of your youth all over again. Get The Sarcastically Annotated A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, available at Amazon and on PDF as well.
Okay, so maybe psychology isn't possibly, at least not as dead as I thought it might be. Hopefully. One can dream, damn it. I knew I loved online culture and the furry fandom for a reason. I mean, people complain, oh, anonymity, that's bad, it creates monsters, etc., but it also creates change and a willingness to adapt as well.
Yeah.
I knew I loved the fandom for a reason.